What's up, guys? Welcome to the, I can't believe I'm calling it this, the reunion show for Roleplay R&D for Apocalypse World. Campaign has finished. We will start probably, I think, next week, right? Is that, I guess that's when we're playing, is next week with the new rule set. Maybe we'll tease that here at the end. But yeah, we're going to talk about Apocalypse World, talk about the characters, and probably take some questions from the chat towards the end. So I guess first off is we'll do the easy questions. What did you guys like about Apocalypse World the most as a rule set? Oh, you guys are muted. There you go.
I'll go first. I mean, obviously, you know, you play D&D. We've also got Dark Heresy going on. And there are definitely times where the rule set seem brutal. And I love the game because of that. But at the same time, you know, especially for the kickoff of this show where, you know, it really allowed us to focus on role play. Like, I love the narrative style. Yeah. And I think that, you know, one thing that that Steve does great as a GM is he always brings that narrative style even to something like Dark Heresy. So in this case, it was like we actually got to help Steve build that world. And that's awesome. I really love that aspect of it.
Yeah, I was actually, I mean, that was actually the first thing I was going to say is I love how just one role can totally change the whole situation. But also, like, it can spiral either in a good way or a bad way. Yeah. And I love that we got to help make this world and make these characters. And because everyone, like, a lot of people have ways to make leadership or have a gang or have other crew, you just have all these other characters and interactions that you're making and, like, bonding and friendships. So there's so much character building, and I think that's really important in a role-play game.
Yeah. I think my favorite thing about it, actually, someone hit me up on Twitter. Tight End Graphics asked, was Lore Jr. planned in any way, or was it just beautifully incorporated into the story by JP and Silent Osiris? Lore Jr. was not planned. That came straight out of JP. He just interjected that at complete random as a part of his character. And one of the coolest things that I find about Apocalypse World and the hacks that came out of it is that, like, one of the big things for me is that the rules really do modify player behavior and the way players interact with the rule set. And what Apocalypse World does is it builds these rules that really let the players engage in that way. So, like, this idea that there's this completely new religion and, you know, all sorts of little details, from using VHS tapes as currency to these porno mags that were, like, had animals in them, but were still, like, a really important part of stuff. Like, because when you make a roll, the results are never told to you by the rules. Like in Dungeons and Dragons, when you make a roll, the rules tell you the results of either the success of that roll or the failure of that roll.
Right.
In Apocalypse World, the rules tell you the sorts of stories you can tell based on the results of that roll. So when Emberly failed that roll at the very end, I could have decided to have a completely different result. But basically every failure lets me do whatever I want, which is also a danger because it can get into a situation if you don't trust your GM, or if you feel like your GM is being a dick, it can just be like, well, I failed that role and that means the GM is going to kill me. And that sucks. I mean,
something that I love that you did, and I mean, in some portions of Apocalypse World, this is an option that you have too, is there's options, right? So mm-hmm. I mean, even if you roll well, you still could choose a bad option, right? Because mm-hmm. you have like 5 or 6 options that you can choose from. And if you choose the wrong one for that situation, it could be a detriment to you. But something that I will have to say and implore you on, Steven, is that you gave us like hard decisions to make, but they were always like spot on. I loved it. It was cool.
Good.
I think that was probably to speak to that a little bit more. One of the, like you said, one of the things that sucks about D&D, or sorry, that I dislike, it's obviously an opinion, it doesn't suck, but is that you give like a, you can do this, but you'll take this, or you can do this, and that happens. Like, I like the choices. I don't like a finite thing happening because of X. Like, I like the variability, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
One of the other things, too, is with, and maybe it also kind of goes hand in hand with that. Like, when I first saw the character sheets, I was kind of, they looked kind of boring to me. It didn't look like there was that much to the characters, right?
Yeah. It's absolutely true.
And I think that the fact that it, I didn't understand how the leveling system, I still don't fucking understand the harm system that well, but I like that you can like take from other rule sets and like build a character how you actually want to build it. Completely free form. Like yeah. I was the driver, but, or I guess I kind of did everything drivery, but Maggie like took shit from a ton of other classes. And I think that actually like helped her character be what she wanted to be. Obviously she can speak to that, but I like that the most out of it.
Yeah. So actually there's a really interesting comment I wanted to give there. When we first started looking into Apocalypse World as a potential rule set for us to play, the guys were all like, hey, what do these classes do? They all like,
right.
I think even JP mentioned they didn't seem very, like it was hard to choose between them. And something I kept coming back to is in Dungeon World, choosing your class only means a very small amount of what your character does. Most of what your character does is the core moves, is the basic moves that everybody has access to.
Right.
That also encourages good role play because it's not about what your class can do and can't do. It's about how you play it. So Bubba is an amazing character because he's Bubba, not because he has these things that he does. Evan, Emberly, they're like so unique, not because of their in-game developments, but because the in-game developments are sort of incredibly freeform, and also there's not a whole lot there. It lets you really do whatever you want.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and your actions really matter too. Like what you do in the game will build your character too, and kind of like change the way that you're going to react to situations. I mean, I know a lot of people were like commenting on YouTube and saying like, oh, you guys should have done this or done X or done Y. And I'm like, you're not always going to do the smartest decision if you're playing a character. I mean, a lot of times you got to think about like, what would my character do? Not like, what would I want to do? Obviously, I wouldn't have wanted to die, but I think that, you know, like my character would have been like, no, this guy needs to die even if I'm sacrificing myself, right? I want to protect the people around me that I love and care for.
Right, exactly. So let's talk about the characters here for a while. So we'll start with Wheat. I feel like, and I would hope that the rest of the party will kind of talk about this, like I feel like you set out to be a badass with Evan Masters, and that's what he was through and through.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, you know, like it was funny too, because Apocalypse World going in, we had the stage set, like, The beauty of this game is that I'm like, yo, man, I'm going to fucking slay a bunch of infected. This is going to be awesome. We're just going to be killing infected all day. And when it came down to it, it was more about the people, right? So then suddenly I'm like, okay, this is great, because now I want to figure out how I get to be a badass, but then still try to work with these people and convince them to do what I want to do. And, you know, that was cool. I wasn't expecting that but I didn't want to change my character as a result. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I'm still going to go in hard and I'll just do it with all this politics going on behind me. And hence the like, okay, Shaz, I'll work with you and just try to, you know, just play the character that way anyway. So I really enjoyed Evan Masters. You know, I think he fit also that world. So, well, I don't know what's going to come up next, but I'm excited to see what's beyond that. But yeah, attention, bitches, says Evan. So it was good. I liked it.
Maggie, yeah, what about Evan?
Loved Evan's character. I mean, like Evan as a character too. Like, I think it fit really well with our characters as a whole, because he was kind of always like, no, I'm going at this.
Right.
I'm just, if I get angry, I'm going to like freaking Hulk smash, right? But at the same time, your character was like really aware of a lot of the situations, you know? And I think that really helped our party as well.
It's true. Steve, you have any comments on Evan Masters?
And Evan was hilarious. Like, everything about all of the characters is awesome. But for me, almost like my favorite part of interacting with the, like, Evan's character is when we did the 1 month fast forward on the second session. And I had already pinned Evan's character as being this really, like, balls to the wall, hard guy who's not very cool in the dungeon world. Our Apocalypse World sense of being cool. And like just having him roll against his cool to see how much shit he fucked up in the month that he had been there. That was hilarious to me. And then he just decided to choose for all of it. So that was a lot of fun.
What about Emberly? Maggie, is when you set out to kind of make that character, was that, were you more influenced by what was going on in the world, or did you stick to what you had originally planned to do with her?
So this is the weirdest thing for me, is I read like every freaking character sheet. I read all,
yeah,
like,
you read
everything
a lot. I remember that. You actually have a hard time.
You are all over that, yeah.
Yeah, I read everything. I mean, when I play games, I'm like a min-maxer, so that's what I want to do, you know? And I found it really hard to choose a class. Like, I didn't know what I was going to play the day that we started. I was just like, here are all the combinations of OP shit that I can find. And I had like a list of 20 of them, and I just couldn't decide what abilities, what combination of character, like, and it just actually ended up being a lot more situational. Like, I would choose things based on what was going on rather than like where I thought my character was going to go or how I thought my character was going to be. And that's not like me. Like, normally when I play like D&D or anything of that sort, I'm always like, I have a full background story written already, and I have like all these other characters that I've interacted with in my life. And I don't know, I loved it. I loved where it went. It's cool.
I think Imberly was kind of the, honestly, the reason we probably lived through most of the shit that we got ourselves in. Like, Evan Masters was always,
yeah,
always the one that, like, did the damage. But I was the one trying to fuck shit up. Evan Masters was the one trying to kill shit. And Imberly was the one that was, like, trying to reason and, like, bring thinking into
That's
the
true.
Party.
Mm-hmm.
So
I was actually
really wanting to play Gunlugger. It was one of the options that I was thinking about playing. But since, you know, we chose that and JP chose Driver, I was like, well, what's going to be a really good combination with this party? And since I got to choose last as well, I was just like, well, yeah, I'm going to pick the Touchstone and just do like this mega combo making me like a battle Jesus. And I think, you know, I got tons of people saying that in chat all the time throughout the, you know, the whole session. So I feel like I accomplished that goal.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Wheat or Steven, you guys have comments?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with what JP said about it being sort of the brain of the the three person operation. I also liked that just Imberly wasn't really, because I don't know how much the whole, you know, psychic maelstrom plays into the game, you know, as the universe right. expands or all the different things you can do. But that was probably the one area that I wished I would have maybe done a little bit more. So I like the fact that, you know, that was brought to the table through that character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually wish that I like used that a little bit more than I did, but I felt like it's kind of cheesy sometimes. So I was like, I didn't really want to like abuse that too much. I will say that it's very like this like the Touchstone's a very interesting character. You can go so many different ways with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could have just gone like a totally opposite direction with that, but I felt like I kind of had to be that person that was kind of like the brain in the sense of things. But you guys came up with some great strats on various different things as well.
Imberly was a really interesting character to me personally because she had so much connection to the town originally, and like she had Eli that she was much more connected with in the beginning. And, you know, she's like knew who was who and what was going on and was able to like go and interact with the NPCs in a much more sort of direct way than the other two were. Just as a way of the story grew, but with her being in the town and then the other two driving up randomly in the first session.
And I will say, Steve, thank you. Like, I've never really gotten to be part of building that. So it was really cool to be able to. I wasn't expecting that, right?
I remember the first session when you came in. Like, he was like, so what happens here?
And I'm like,
Maggie, and you're like, well, fuck, go to someone else. I need, like, 20 minutes or something.
I wasn't prepared to, like, build a city. But it's cool to be able to see that grow.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I guess I'll just kind of like talk about Bubba and how that character came about. So I was torn between the driver and the Juggernaut, and I think Maggie said that she was thinking Juggernaut, but no one mentioned driver, and I was like, well, I could probably have fun with that. And the only like thing I went into the game with in terms of like what I wanted to do with the character is, I wanted to try to do an entire campaign with an actual voice that was like made up for a character, and I wanted him to be somehow related to NASCAR. And that was like all that I came into the story with. And like, I think we sat down for the first session And I honestly think it was someone in the chat that said something about like Dale Earnhardt Jr. And I was like, well, how can I like bring this into the story or something?
Oh, man.
Awesome.
And so that's like where Lord Jr. came from. And then the Cheetos thing was just kind of fucking random. I don't know why I said that or where that... That's like really what that character was. It's like I was always given...
A bunch of like movie memes.
Well, I was like always given decisions. And it's like, well, what the fuck kind of like weirdness can I throw in here? And so I would just do that.
No, but dude, I love the plot twist at the end where you're like... No, I don't believe any of this bullshit. I'm just making it up. I was like, whoa!
Well, that,
my
so
mind
that,
was blown.
Is
I was
that,
like,
is that real,
awesome.
JP?
What, like, yes. So I decided, like, I think this was last week sometime, like in the middle of the session, I was like, what if I pull off like a Kaiser Sose moment? Like, what if I actually think all of this is bullshit? And I've always wanted to, like, have a monumental impact on the game, or that's what I always set out to do, is like have a moment. And so, like, when I did that, I sat there and, like, struggled with how many different ways I could bring that to the party. And I think it worked out, have it interacting with Fuse first and then bring it to the party at the very end. Mm-hmm. But as I, like, started to do that, it made sense for the character because, like, when I ask you how old the world was, I was going to go on this story that, like, the makers are the people that were, like, the great-great-great-grandchildren of... like people in the present day. And so like all of this popular media and shit, and in the world that we were set in, it would be NASCAR. They would probably eat a lot of fucking like bad food. So Cheetos, and like, they would be very religious. And then that's how like the world ended, was religion like fucked everything over. And they saw how like strong and how easy it was to like coerce people into doing shit with religion. So that's how I like tied it all in together. I don't know if it actually worked. But
I thought it worked great. I thought it was
pretty cool.
Good.
Definitely.
It was, you know, like for me at first, I was like, what the hell? And then I'm like, you know what? Apocalypse World, like shit, man, there's going to be some crazy sons of bitches out here. I'm rolling with this. And it was great.
Well, the cool thing for me,
I think it provided so much humor too.
Yes.
Just love it.
JP, like Bubba was a crazy character for a couple of reasons. One is that you made such incredibly strong choices with your character, JP, like porno mags that had animals in them.
Yeah.
Awesome. Like, one, you've got something that you want and you want to keep.
Well, when I saw Barter, that's what I thought. I was like, well, what was the other one? It was porno mags and something else for the other piece of Barter that I had.
VHS?
Oh, yeah, it was a VHS, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like,
I think so.
That, like, when a character in a pen and paper game has things that they want and that they want to protect, that gives your GM so much fun. Because it's like, oh, immediately I was able to start like trying to take that stuff away from you. And even in the very first session, you like blew the door off with a shotgun because someone was going to go steal your dirty mags. And that was awesome. And then you came out of nowhere with losing all your shit gambling.
So to go to that moment, when I asked Steven if I could do something and I like sent him the private message, that was the private message. It was, hey, do you care if I lose everything right here?
Yeah.
Or no, I think it was like, hey, do you care if I like totally change the story or some shit?
Yeah,
like
you said, can I derail?
That's what it was.
What you said. And I was like, absolutely. And then you came out with this story about having lost all of your shit. And that turned into like the entire session, which was awesome.
And it worked. No, it worked great because we already had this gambling thing that was kind of like underground, like going. And it just like grew the lore of that, like that portion.
Right.
And we'd even mentioned that earlier in like session two or something like that. One of the biggest things about Apocalypse World, like, to talk about the GM side for a little bit, like, this is what I have. It's a sheet of NPCs and like all of the different sort of like motivations. Nice. Here's like some different names that I could use. And then I've got this, which is called a front. So this is a sheet that describes four distinct threats that the characters are facing. So the four threats that I chose were the infection, and I have like rules for how the infection is spreading. I've got Shazza, and he was a warlord who was a prophet. That's a type of threat. And then I have the canyon, because I decided on our threats before the first session. So the canyon was a threat. which is a place. It's a maze. And then I had Fuse, who's a grotesque, which is a mind fucker. And so, like, knowing those threats and knowing the way that the players have previously been relating to them, and, like, Apocalypse World gives you specific ways that each of these threats act. So, for example, Shazza is a warlord. MC moves for warlords are to make a show of force, make a show of discipline, attack nice. Someone suddenly, directly, and very hard. Like, whenever any of you fail a roll, I could do any of those things. And, like, the grotesque Fuse is such, like, he turned into such a great character because I decided he was a grotesque who craved mastery. And so one of his moves is to display the contents of his heart. And I pulled that out in, like, session two, where DJ Wheat went down into the cellar and found, like, all this stuff that he was obsessed with. So, nice. Like, what I have shown you on screen now is, like, literally all of the preparation that I had done for this entire campaign. And then I would, like, jot down notes about what had happened and, like, sort of the important scenes that I thought should happen the upcoming time. But, like, that session where JP derailed and he turned it into the session about his gambling, I had all of these sort of events that needed to happen to progress the threats that I had.
Right.
But I didn't have story plot that needed to happen. It was all just little events. Let me see if I can actually pull up some of them.
So GP kind of helped you in that way. I love, yeah. I mean, for me, the thing was that I thought that you did well too, is that you made, like, Look seem like he was kind of the face of the badness that was happening, but foreshadowing that all, it was really just Shazza behind the scene, yeah, which I thought was really cool.
Big time.
Now,
hang on. The countdowns that I wanted to progress in the session four, which was last session. So here's what I had written down before the session. This is everything. Eli discovers that gas is running low. Does he make an announcement to town? Are Look and Fuse there? Could someone read a situation? Two, this one didn't happen. We didn't manage to get this one done. Make Evan pay for something. Gas? Nomads are selling gas in the canyon? Who knows? We did this one. Shazza gets crazier. Perfect. Chak approaches Evan with barter to join the Juniorites. That happened. And, like, that wasn't a plot point or anything. I was able to throw it into whatever happened.
Nice. That was a great scene, too. Honestly, someone, if you can make this into an anime series, I would watch it. It's freaking awesome. Take the story.
Just someone's, I think, trying to do that with with D&D. But it's...
Awesome.
D&D it takes is, so like, 180 work. Hours worth of video. So I don't... They got a long time GG. Ahead of them. What were you going to say?
The last two that I have is Gnarly's mom, Matilda, is infected and assaults Bubba. We got that one done. Eli approaches Emberly about Look, Fuse, and Twice, and I think we did that one too. So that's like
Don't
all
worry,
I had
Bubba.
For session
I
four.
I took care of that for you.
And then, like, that framework sets up in the GM's mind the way the world behaves. And then whatever the players do, that framework helps the GM by establishing sort of consistent ways for parts of the world to act no matter what happens. So that's what I love about this. It's so easy to DM.
Yeah, it does seem that way. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, you know, when Shazza was originally a follower of JP or of Bubba's, and I had the altercation with him in the bar, at that point, was he already, like, setting himself up to be this warlord? Like, did you already have that path? I mean, whether it was the Lord Junior path or not, or...
That was in session two, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we had met Shazza before then, so no.
Okay.
And that's the great thing, right? JP just decided that he had gained a workshop and some followers.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, he said, oh, these are converts to Lord Juniorism. And then it was like, oh, man.
So,
speaking of that, I kind of want to bring up something that someone else said in chat. Like, they had, like, a whole thing about it, but they were saying they just love how different all these NPCs were as well. And a lot of that was just, like, via the interactions that we each had with these NPCs and the relationships that we had between them. And like I said, character building is insane in this game. I love it.
Yeah. Someone is asking about, like, when I made the fronts. I made the fronts and threats after session two. Because the interesting thing was, like, after session one, we sort of established the world and everything, but I didn't actually feel like I had enough to really establish threats and fronts and stuff. So I went into session two, and we did that, like, we did the MC's love letter thing, where we fast-forwarded a month, and you each got to choose
something. Oh, I loved that. And yeah, that I loved how, cool. like, the decisions that we made based on that role, like, oh.
Yes, yeah, and that was so much fun. And then, like, that established the world enough for me to take all of that information and create threats, create a front. Mm. And, you know, kick things off into high gear.
One thing that actually kind of spurred from the character as a result of your DMing is, as I saw the Lord Junior thing start to be used more, I actually got annoyed with it because of how much it was, like, in the story. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was like, well, I'll just make my character think this is all, like, fake, or no, this is all fake.
Yeah.
So that was my way of, like, dealing with all of this fucking Lord Junior shit happening around me.
I knew there had to be something weird because you kept going, like, every time Shazza would say all this stuff, you're like, yeah, whatever. You're like, what the fucking, what are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I loved it too,
so I'm like, hmm. And that kind of also, like, the more over the top Shazza got, the more, like, we're all, like, kind of just watching him on the side and, like, the less trusting we were of him.
Yep, absolutely. Exactly.
But you gained his trust back with us when we got into the canyon. And we had that fight with Fuse and him and Twice, and I thought that was really great too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't actually know who, like, the enemy was at that point, or who the big bad was when we were in the canyon. I had no idea. I thought it was Fuse, and then everything was, like, good.
Well, like,
we still don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
that was from our own paranoia though.
One of the great things about Apocalypse World is that it doesn't have to be a big bad. I mean, like, Shazza wasn't the big bad, right? Like, Look was just as deadly. And Fuse was, like, I mean, he got infected. He was a crazy, grotesque mindfucker. When I played Apocalypse World in the past, and actually Tum Tum is based off of one of my previous characters. So,
oh my gosh, Tum Tum!
I had to sort of bring back
that
his mannerisms.
So much.
It was, I played a Brainer in that game. But in this other game, we decided that the apocalypse in the game that I played in was, like, an apocalypse of a psychic sort, where, like, society had sort of fallen and everybody was chasing after their dream of what America was. So to my character, who was, like, a maestro d', who's, like, the owner of a fine establishment, it was Norman Rockwell paintings and Aaron Copland's music. And, like, I love those things, but as a part of my character, I created an NPC who was, like, opposing to my bar. Like, hated my bar. And this guy, his name was Bean Franklin. He just grew into this character that I personally despised because he was constantly at odds with what I wanted in the game. And when I finally got to kill him, it felt so good. So, what I was trying to do.
I feel those feels. Look, yes. Shazza, I was like, die!
Exactly. What I was trying to do with these characters that I was setting up as your antagonists is connect them to you on a personal level. Like, what do you want? And why are these characters trying to keep it from you? And then just, like, keep twisting those knives as hard as I can. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Delightful.
Twisted well.
Killing
man.
Off my people, Steven.
Exactly.
Twisted well.
Exactly. Well, we'll take a couple questions from chat if you guys want to start posting them here. We'll probably only go for about 10 minutes or so with those. But yeah, I think overall, like, I think Apocalypse World is probably one of my favorite tabletops that we've played thus far. Granted, I'm still on kind of the high of finishing it, so I don't know 2 months from now if that'll still be the case. But it was pretty good. I really like that rule set. And it seems so easy to get into.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I really like about it is, like, all the moves are there on one sheet of paper. All that you need to know about your character is there on one sheet of paper. You literally don't need anything else to play. Yeah. I just want to point out we've got a Q&A up on this r/itmejp. So if you want to drop questions there too, we'll probably try to pull some from there.
Wolfery's asking, what aspect of Apocalypse World did you like the least? I actually don't like the harm system. Hmm. Only because I don't understand it. And it also just seems like if I get shot, I don't understand the ramifications of being shot.
I think the harm system makes sense for the way that the system plays, but, like, you know how the last quadrant separated into three? I kind of wish there was two quadrants that way. So there was sort of like, I mean, near the end of the session, I was like, yeah, I got one harm. What the fuck? But like earlier on, I was like, I've got a harm. Like, I can't do anything because I was like putting so much stress on that. I think like it got a little bit more comfortable, but you know, like it would be interesting to me if it would have been like, I know I can take a little bit more damage. And so, you know, I might be more apt to do something crazy or in line with the gunlogger. But I could see where it comes from, JP. I think I got more comfortable as the series went on, though.
I don't think I minded the harm system that much. I thought it was really simple once I understood it. I think more so the process of healing was very confusing and not intuitive at all. Like, we're like, how long does it take? Like a week, 2 weeks? Like, how much does each quadrant take? And do, like, should I be carrying med kits on me? Like, how does all of that work? Like, we weren't really dealt more med kits. We had Kettle, who was just like magically healing us. And without her, it was just like, okay, now what do we do?
The behind the scenes look at that is that, I mean, even the rule book says, harm before 6 o'clock heals over time, but they never say how long that is. They actually say it's probably a couple weeks per harm segment. It's like if you actually got shot in the shoulder and you needed to heal one segment of harm, that's how long it would take. And then harm after 9 o'clock gets worse over time, and it gets worse quickly. So like if you're actually bleeding out, how long does that take? But they never say, oh, it's 1 week per segment of harm. It's entirely narrative driven. So like maybe in certain parts, either there's more explanation that I could have done, or just the simple fact that it's a narrative-driven game means that there are some lingering questions, especially about when it's something that's very mechanically driven, like here is how much HP I have and I'm going to die if it runs out and I want to make it get back.
I will like, say that the system provided some really, like, DJ, I mean, we just said that the same thing as me. Like, he was worried a little bit about, like, what should I do? Like, you're not always sure how low you are in health. Like, what? Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people were saying, like, Emberly didn't care. I'm like, no, she cared. There was a lot of situations where I could have, like, done more, but I just couldn't because I was like, I need, that would have been really bad for me, even though I am kind of, like, a tanky, like, demolishing machine, but I just couldn't do it.
I found a really good question in chat that I want to come back to later. Spy Knight, I really like your question, and I want to talk about it.
Toss that in our chat.
Yeah. Okay. But let's keep going on what we don't like about Apocalypse World, because I think it's a really interesting question. I don't like combat in Apocalypse World.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, like, there's no clear, like, roles to hit or roles to do a combat action. And you've got these two things that are very similar. You've got go aggro, which is when you want to use the threat of violence to get them to do what you want. Or you've got seize by force, which is kind of like whenever you're in a battle, you seize by force. But, like, do you roll to seize by force on every shot you take? And I actually think that I asked you guys to roll to seize by force too often. And what maybe it should feel more like is that a single roll to seize by force is sort of an exchange of shots and blows, and maybe you can just sort of like if you roll the seize by force, like I say, okay, well, you do like this much damage to your target, and then you see a guy pop over, do you want to shoot him? And you just say yes, and then okay, well, he's dead, you shot him. And like, maybe I don't need to make you roll the seize by force like that. That bit of Apocalypse World is just a little bit more confusing to me.
It's a little bit loose.
I think looking at what it allows you to do, I feel like there would have been great situations for us to use some of these, because it's get the hell out of the way, barricade themselves securely, give you something they think you want.
They think you want.
Yeah, back off calmly, hands where you can use or where you can see, and tell you what you want to know. Like, those are all kind of awesome things that could have changed a lot of situations drastically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there were a few times where I went in thinking, oh, this is going to be a fine situation, and it actually not being so fine. But that's actually, I think, just a part of role-playing in general. So
Yeah, that's definitely true.
I will say, to defend the combat a bit, I liked how many options there were. I'm going back to that again. Like, you got to illustrate, or not like illustrate, but like narratively give us descriptions of these epic battles that happened and the situations based on like the three things or two things or one thing that we chose, you know? Yeah. And I think that I don't know, I love that in an RP game. And I haven't had, like, other than one D&D experience where I've had combat situations where I, like, remember them and had dreams about them. So I was dreaming about this stuff. It was awesome.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, Steve, let's take your question, and then I think we'll probably do the end of the show. So go ahead.
I totally forget who asked this. I should have copied your name. Someone Knight asked, for Steve, as a DM
Sky
or
Knight.
GM.
Sky Knight.
Sky Knight. Thank you. As a DM or GM, when should story trump rules, and when should rules trump story? So this is a really interesting question, because I've seen a bunch of people talking about, like, traditional Dungeons & Dragons and, like, do I prepare traditional D&D in the same way, or like Warhammer 40,000 Dark Heresy, do I prepare that in the same way? And I think the answer is dependent on the rule set you're playing. Like, in Apocalypse World, and actually, like, this is an interesting thing, because, like, there's been a couple of situations in Dark Heresy, and maybe JP and DJ Wheat have sort of remembered some of these, when Jeff would say, oh, well, I want to walk up to him and shoot him in the head.
Right.
And in a game like Apocalypse World, I can just say, you do, and his head explodes, and it's awesome. But in a game like Dark Heresy, it's harder to say that. So the interesting thing is, like, I was reading a primer on another game recently, and it was talking about how, like, some games, like traditional D&D, are about how good you are at something. And so in traditional D&D, or in, like, D&D 3.5 at least, when you're building your character, you're building your character to be good at things. And when you use the rules, you're reinforcing your character's decisions to be good at things. And so in that circumstance, like, allowing the rules to restrict options in the story and say, no, you can't shoot him in the head because you haven't built your character to be good at that, that's actually interesting. And I've played some really interesting games of traditional Dungeons and Dragons that were very, very strict on rules, mm-hmm. that were all about, like, how many rations do I have left? How much light, how many hours of light do I have left? What's my hit points at? How much ammo do I have? Oh my God, we only have one healing potion left. We have to get all the way back to town. Can we hunt? Can we forage? Fascinating stuff that's really rules restricted, I think works really well. But in a game like this, it's not about how good you are at a certain thing. It's about the consequences for failure.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that also a lot of those games are very, and a lot of RP games in general are very item driven too. Like, you'll find that people, when you kill people,
that's true.
They're all like,
there were no items in Apocalypse
World. I got to find something before someone else does. Like, if you're a thief or something like that, like, I love that that wasn't a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Never once was one of us like, oh, I need to make sure that I loot all this stuff before someone else loots it. Like,
I never
it was never about
it was, looting was all always bonus.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And it wasn't always just one person. It was like multiple people were getting various different things. And I think that that's something to note about it. It wasn't, I mean, even like RPG games that you're playing via video games, are a lot of them are item driven. That's what your motivation is. And I love that our motivations weren't just items. Our motivations were like these crazy story plots that were happening. I loved it.
Yeah.
So to come back to the final question, like, when should story trump rules and when should rules trump story? Like, I really believe that the rules of the game that you're playing change the way that the game plays and it changed the way that players behave. So you should look at a rule set and try to say, what is this rule set actually trying to do? And then operate within those constraints and say, okay, well, this is a simulationist rule set. It's about simulating this experience. Let's really drive that home. Let's really simulate. Or no, this is a narrative rule set. It's trying to tell a story. Let's really go wild with it. Maggie, you just made a very interesting thing that I wanted to touch on as a dungeon master or as a player of pen and paper games and of video games as well. Simulationist games, I feel, can be done very well on the computer. You've got, like, Baldur's Gate, Icewind Dale, Neverwinter Nights, all of these games that really, like, they track hit points, track ammo, track light, do all that stuff for you. And, like, that stuff gets a little fiddly on the tabletop, but it works really well when a computer is tracking it for you.
Right.
I have never yet played a game on the computer that is as flexible and as freeform as this is in person. And that's, like, I've had conversations with people who say, oh, I don't like tabletop games because I think computers do them better. And I've never met a computer game that can do what this game does.
Hell yeah.
I mean, yet. Like, the whole concept of imagination and, like, the and what you guys are envisioning is probably not the same thing I'm envisioning, but all of it to each of us is very exciting. And we're thinking of each of these combat situations or these, like, character interactions, and we're envisioning them, and it's, I mean, we're not always going to be envisioning the same thing, which I think is amazing. Whereas a video game, you are like looking at the pixels, you see exactly that. We all see the exact same thing, and it doesn't leave as much to imagination. But onto the like the main topic, which was, what was the question again?
Rules trumping story trumping rules.
I think a lot of the time, something that like DMs get really stuck in is that they're like, these are the rules and I have to abide by them all the time. And I think that a lot of the times as a DM, you kind of have to just go with the flow of things. Like if a player comes up with this concept, go with it, like pull at it, see where you can go, see what it does to the party and how it affects them. And not only that, but if you want something to happen, make it happen. I mean, obviously make it happen in a way that like the players don't feel like, oh, that was cheap. You cheated. You like, yeah, whatever, you know, make it feel like, oh, I like because of my action now this occurred, rather than like, oh great, the DM just hates me, right? Yeah. And I think a lot of the times people hate the DM because of that, and it's like, no, the DM has like so much power, but the way you do it is how like what matters.
One of the interesting things about Apocalypse World and especially Apocalypse World is that in tabletop games you're all trying to entertain each other. Like, it's a group of people who are all friends sitting around a table trying to make sure everybody else at the table is entertained. That's what tabletop gaming is all about to me. And Apocalypse World, there's actually a secret rule about Apocalypse World, which is that in most games, the DM is trying to entertain the players. In Apocalypse World, as the DM, you are trying to get the players to entertain you. And I have to say, you guys did a great job.
Awesome.
There we go. I think
two very interesting questions that I just wanted to touch on really quick.
Sure.
Will this party be in the next rule set?
Yes.
I think everybody here is basically considered a permanent member of R&D. Like, we might add other people and cycle them in and out, but everybody here will be here next. And what's the next rule set? I'll let JP handle that.
I mean, do...
You gonna tease it?
I think it's better if we just show up next week.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Show up next week. There's your cliffhanger.
It's gonna be cool.
I wanna ask this final question, and I'm summarizing it because you had like a block of text. But Jubobicus is asking, are there things you wanted to do in the game that you weren't able to do?
I wanted to do my magic trick so fucking bad. You have no idea.
Tell us your magic trick. Because, like, I was actually really curious. I was like, okay.
So funny because over Christmas break, where I'm, like, sitting around with my family, and my brother's like, oh, the David Blaine special's on. So, like, we sit around as a family and watch the David Blaine special. So, like... As this whole thing's happening here, and I'm just thinking about poker, deck of cards, gambling, you know, deck of cards. I'm like, I want to like David Blaine this guy. But my Evan's version of David Blaine is that, you know, I wanted him to actually pick a card, which Steve would not do. He was like, fuck you and your cards. I wanted him to pick a card. And then I was purposely going to bring out the wrong one and hold it up in his face and ask him if this was his card. And then I was just going to smash him. But I never got to do my magic trick. Damn it. So,
God.
What about you, JP?
I'm trying to think if there was any... thing in particular.
Do all kinds of crazy shit.
I pretty much got my, like, I didn't know how I wanted it to happen or where it was going to happen, just that I want it to happen, like a big reveal type deal. So I got that in. I kind of just waited for it. Actually, there was I think it was week 3 where Evan started getting drunk at the end of the episode. So at the start of the next episode, when I said that I lost all my stuff, I actually wanted to do something where I was just like, I had like a line prepared where I would like come out of the bar and do something crazy, then we would cliffhanger it there. But we didn't get to do it. So then that's kind of where it came into the next episode. And then the other thing too, which slipped in today's episode, it was very poorly done, but it was the Independence Day fucking reference. I wanted to give like a crazy, start like a speech that had nothing to do with the movie and then just like wrap into the end of the movie with the stupid line, but
it worked out kind of. But Emberly made such a great speech. I remember asking you to make a speech like last session.
It was great.
I was like not prepared for that.
And then just all of a sudden this time I was like, Emberly, what are you doing? You were like, speech time, motherfuckers.
Yeah, it was good. It was good speech.
And then my internet hit the fan. But exactly. I was like, oh man, that was cool. What about you, Steve? Like, as a DM, was there something that you wanted to do that you weren't able to do?
So one of the core tenets of Apocalypse World from the GM's perspective or from the MC's perspective is play to find out what happens. And so, like, there were a lot of situations, and if you guys look back on it, you can probably start pinpointing. There were a lot of situations where, like, I left a character's life in your hands. So, like, Eli was bleeding out, you know, below the place. And you guys just sort of fucking ignored him. And I was like, oh.
I tried to, like, something. But there was chaos. It's like, there was a lot of times for, like, 30? Like, I don't know.
What were you saying? Hard. We there was a section where you were trying to do the magic trick. And I was like, they're all brandishing their weapons. What do you do? And he was like, magic trick. And I was like, they get closer with their weapons. What do you do? Like, playing Apocalypse World from the MC's perspective is all about setting up situations. And those are called soft moves. So, like, I make a soft move, which is that I set up some badness that's probably going to happen, and then I let the players respond. Based on the players responding or not responding or rolling like shit, then I get to make a hard move. So, for example, when Evan did not respond to this gang that was, like, threatening to beat him up, I just said, okay, well, they beat you up. So, I don't have anything that I wanted to do because I was really trying to play by the rules of the MC's handbook, which is play to find out what happens. So it was awesome.
That is awesome.
I think me personally, I would have loved to see another part of, other than the canyon. Like, I would have really loved to see, like, one of the other cities or something like that to kind of see where Steve was kind of envisioning this apocalypse like world, because we only saw like a town really, and we didn't really get to see like this the full world of it and how like these different towns interacted, and I kind of wish that we could have gotten to see a bit more of that personally.
I have a question.
I will say that I love the way that JP and DJ coming into the campaign together like ended up happening, because I was a little worried for a while there, because I was like, how are we going to all, like, feel like we're, you know, together?
Sure.
And so I was a little worried about that.
What were awesome. You going to say?
Oh, I was just going to ask, someone else asked it too, and I thought it was interesting. Obviously, like, we have sort of a plan for the upcoming sessions, but let's say, like, Cycle 7 rolls around. would there ever be an Apocalypse World Part 2?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, we continue with the characters. It's always fun to.
Well, I would have to maybe.
You'd
like
have to make a new one, yeah. It's always fun to slip back into a character, though. Like,
or I could take on a persona of one of the other characters, and I think that might be interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
That'd be true.
Awesome. You guys, it was awesome.
It was good.
Apocalypse World was great.
I think it was great. It's very easy to play, so if you're hesitant to even DM, I think it's actually a lot easier to DM than D&D.
I think so. I think it's. Basically
way less
one of
rules.
The easiest.
Yeah,
exactly. It's so simple. There's few
way
rules.
Less rules.
And the book actually really tells you how to DM well. If you just read the book and do what it says, you will run a good game.
I think a lot of people in the chat have actually seen it asked multiple times. Steven, what were the lights off in the distance coming to the city?
Who knows, man?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We'll find out in session 7, right?
And that's the great thing about Apocalypse World, right? I don't need to know what those lights were.
Sure.
All I need to know is that there's lights and they're getting closer. And then I just let you guys.
Well, that's what I messaged you. I was like, Wheat's going to ask me what these are.
Yeah.
Do I make it up or do you want to make it up?
So, like, maybe they were some infected coming towards the thing. And maybe there was like this time pressure to get shit sorted in paradise before the infected got there and started attacking you. Or maybe they were like, you know, some random survivors from Shantytown who were coming to try and help you out.
I was thinking that maybe they were the guys who were coming for us when the siren thing was going off and we're trying to get the help for the gas.
Well, they were being drawn to you by the siren.
Right.
But whether they were good, whether they were bad, who exactly they were, it didn't really matter, because I can use them as sort of a way to pressure motion
us,
forwards,
yeah.
Right? And then like when they get there, what happens? Who's in charge of the town? Who greets them? Who makes negotiations for whatever? You know, who's fighting? All sorts of really cool stuff comes out just from. So that's actually one of the MC's moves is a hint at future badness. And that's all that is, right? I just say, oh, there's something happening and it might be bad and it's going to come this way.
There you go.
Figure it out later.
All right. Let's go ahead and do some shout outs here. Wrap up the show. That actually was an hour. So good job. Wheat, go ahead and do some shout outs.
First off, I want to say thank you guys for an amazing first cycle of R&D. I can't wait to find out what is going to be happening in the second cycle. Actually, I know, but I'll just play it off like, I don't know. I have no idea. So very excited to see what the cycle two brings us. Tomorrow we've got 8-Bits, the first of 2014. Find out what very unlikely game I've been addicted to all week, and we'll be chatting about all sorts of others. In fact, you know what? Not a lot of shit's happened, JP, so we might actually open up the phone tomorrow. So hopefully you guys will tune in at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Otherwise, we'll see you next time for another Roleplay R&D.
There you go. Steve, some shout-outs.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Maggie, DJ Weed, JP, you guys all rule. Special thanks to our host, JP McDaniels, because McDaniel.
There you go. I was going to make a fucking shitty joke, too, because mispronounced the name.
For letting me do this, because I have, like, I'm ADD enough. I suffer from constant re-roller syndrome that I love the idea of having a couple of campaigns that play through different rule sets. And thanks to everybody for watching. If you don't know, which I think most of you do, I'm the lead level designer for a game called Warhammer 40,000 Eternal Crusade, which is basically PlanetSide 2 in the Warhammer 40,000 universe. It's different than that. That's an oversimplification, but that gives you a good impression of what we're going for. So if you're interested in that, you should definitely check it out.
There you go. Maggie, some shout outs.
Hi. Or I guess this is bye. I'm kind of sad. I want to say thank you to you guys. You're a great, awesome crew to RP with. I mean, I've played with a couple different groups, and, you know, this is probably one of my favorites. I love all the characters that you guys made. I love the world that you made, Steve. Fantastic. Thank you guys for watching. Thank you, Apocalypse World developers. Love the game. I think it's fantastic. I hope that you continue making more renditions of this game. I think I love it. My next thing is going to be I am a game developer and also the community manager for PlanetSide 2. So if you want to check out PlanetSide 2, as Steven said, it's an awesome freaking game. You know, got like thousands of people on a map. If you're into FPS games, this is the one that you should play. And I will be streaming tomorrow at twitch.tv/PlanetSide2 from 5 to 7 p.m., which I do every Friday for PlanetSide 2. And you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and all that stuff. You can check out my website, margaretcrone.com.
I actually just put in chat, the developer of Apocalypse World is named Vincent Baker. He is at Lumpley Games on Twitter. So give him a follow. He's definitely still doing a bunch of stuff. So he's awesome.
Yeah, send him love from us. Yes.
But don't spam the poor guy. Just say
no.
No, spam him.
Just say you appreciate his work.
Spam him with love. Only if you're spamming him with love.
Exactly. Exactly. I usually keep it pretty short, but I'm going to go off here. Tomorrow, 8-Bits, 1 o'clock EST, which is what we had already referenced. Saturday, we've got Dark Heresy with myself, Wheat, Steve, In Control, and Total Biscuit. That's starting at 1 o'clock Eastern. Is that what 1 o'clock Eastern. Next week, Roleplay Eben. I think all the shows are going to be back next week. So Roleplay Eben is back next Thursday, I think, is when we're going to start that, probably 4 o'clock EST. Roleplay D&D most likely will be next Sunday. I'll have more information on that sometime next week once I confirm with the rest of the crew. And I think in terms of teasing for the next thing, I think what we'll say is that we're trying to get a fifth person on the show. And that's all I'll say. I'm not going to say anything about the role. We most likely will have a fifth person, so we'll see.
Should tell them to put, like, in the comments below this video who they would like to see as the fifth.
There you, well, ooh. I might get kind of spammy. also, I love the fact that for some reason, and we're not playing Made RPG next week, but we should strongly consider playing Made RPG in the future because this looks absolutely ridiculous, even if it's for one session.
Is that a real thing? Oh my god.
Yeah, it is. There's actually a whole trading card game around okay. it as well. It looks,
change of plans.
It looks really
I love that we really get that, like the way that R&D is going to work is that we're going to be able to play all kinds of different games that we want to play.
Exactly.
I think that's probably my favorite. And yeah. it doesn't even have to be it could be like a one-time session or like this like a, you know, yep. 5 weeks.
And Steve actually has like a Google Doc with all of this shit in it, so
yeah.
So we'll
see. I'm
putting
Made RPG in there right now.
There you go. Cycle 8 right after the reunion of Cycle 7 for Apocalypse World.
For sure.
All right. We're out. We will see you guys tomorrow for 8-Bits. If not, we'll see you on Saturday for Dark Heresy. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Roleplay R&D. We'll be back. I think next Saturday is when we'll play. Unless we're doing Dark Heresy, then it'll be on Thursday evening. I'll let you know on Twitter. You can follow twitter.com/realroleplay as well as everyone else on the show, which you can find right below their names right now. We are out, guys. Thank you all for watching. It's been a pleasure. We will see you.
Batty, next time. I love you.
Wheat loves Batty. Bye. We're out. Peace.